Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, it was just yesterday that we mentioned that Trump and Clinton are essentially neck and neck in three critical battleground states, and it's largely because that voters don't like either one of them very much. But Hillary Clinton, while the math is obviously in her favor, especially when you factor in the superdelegates to be the Democratic presidential nominee, somebody keeps forgetting to tell the Democratic voters. Clinton did win fairly comfortably in Nebraska on Tuesday, but Bernie Sanders beat her 51-36 in West Virginia, which is not a huge surprise given that Clinton was on the record at a town hall in Ohio saying she wanted to kill the coal industry and take away jobs from coal workers. But nonetheless, this is the 20th state that Bernie Sanders has won. He's not going away, and it looks like she could be limping into this nomination.
One of the other problems for Hillary Clinton is that not only did she, you know, not win West Virginia last night, not only did the exit polls indicate that one-third of Democratic voters in West Virginia say they're going to vote for Donald Trump now.
Right.
It's not even like if my preferred candidate doesn't win, I'm voting in the Democratic primary, but I've already decided I'm voting for Trump. It's not that West Virginia was really key to Democratic hopes. It had been trending pretty Republican in presidential races for the better part of a decade now. But it just is one more obvious troubling indicator. And oh, by the way, almost all of the states that remain are kind of demographically in the neighborhood of Iowa and New Hampshire, meaning kind of your white progressives. They're in the upper Midwest and West. California is the only one where you'd say that is really diverse. And if Hillary's being fueled by the African-American vote in these Democratic primaries, well, she's going to have to wait until California to get there. It's very possible that Hillary Clinton is going to end up the Democratic nominee, but close out the race on a whole bunch of losses. And, you know, there's a little bit of history to this. Back in 2008, Hillary, I believe, closed on something like 7 or 8 wins in a row. Even though it was very clear at that point Obama was going to be the nominee, there was this, you know, the Obama supporters kind of thought they had it wrapped up, and the Hillary supporters wanted to send a message with their votes. Hillary Clinton, who, you know, is ironically has not wrapped this up before Donald Trump has effectively wrapped up the Republican nomination, is now, you know, going to come really limp into this general election. And there's already some indications that it's not going that great for her. It's an online poll from Reuters today, so you can be a little wary about it. But they have Clinton 41, Trump 40. Which probably should be generating a lot of spit takes in Brooklyn this morning.
Probably so. Oh, man. Well, apparently Hillary needs to go to the podium and in her best New York accent, if she has one, say, Bernie Sanders has been mathematically eliminated, because that worked really well for Donald Trump.
The sweet tone, yes.
Speaking of being mathematically eliminated, that was a line that Trump used to greater effect than we probably expected, given that most people assume that they knew the Ted Cruz strategy was to deny Trump the 1237 rather than to get there in the later states of the campaign while Cruz was still an active candidate. But yesterday, Cruz was a guest on the Glenn Beck Show. Glenn Beck was a very strong supporter of Ted Cruz, went to a number of his rallies, stumped for him, served as a spokesman before some of the caucuses. Very active. And whatever you think of Glenn Beck, he was definitely in favor of Ted Cruz. He had Cruz on his radio show yesterday as folks were going to the polls in West Virginia and Nebraska. And here was the exchange starting with Glenn Beck.
If Nebraska were to somehow,
it's not going to happen,
miraculously choose you tonight.
Pat's going for the Hail Mary.
Is there, I mean, if that happened, would you consider getting back in the race?
Well, I am not holding my breath. My assumption is that will not happen. But listen, let's be very clear. If there is a path to victory, we launched this campaign intending to win. The reason we suspended the race last week is with Indiana's loss, I didn't see a viable path to victory. If that changes, we will certainly respond accordingly.
I don't know about you, Nebraska, but I take that as a yes.
First of all, Trump won 61-18 in Nebraska yesterday, so you can pretty much cancel this. Jim, if Ted Cruz thought Nebraska was pivotal to keeping his hopes alive, I'm pretty sure he would have stuck in another week.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. If this isn't just it's a Hail Mary, this is very much Cal State. The band is on the field. Oh, my goodness. You know. Two things about that. One, I suppose you could say this is the bargaining stage for Ted Cruz supporters and for folks who don't want to see Trump being the nominee. I can't begrudge Glenn Beck for wanting to see. No, is there some other option here? Is there some other thing that can, you know, that can happen? And the other thing is that, you know, he's kind of, you know, chuckling as he gives that answer there, Greg. But for the most of that interview, Ted Cruz didn't sound like a guy who's now totally comfortable with post-candidate life. He did not sound like he was eager to go back to the Senate. I apparently this morning he issued a statement saying that, by golly, it's going to go. He's going to run for re-election to the Senate. He doesn't sound like he's completely come to terms with this. And I don't think it does him or his supporters any good to kind of indicate, well, yeah, I suspended my campaign, but I could bring it back. You know, it's this isn't Frankenstein. You don't bring it back from the dead. I think if you really thought you had a chance to win Nebraska, you should have stayed in and went in Nebraska. And he had made very clear that barring some mass protests, some mass you know, revolt on the part of the delegates, Trump's going to be the nominee. And we don't necessarily have to like it. But I don't know if this is almost teasing for Ted Cruz to say, well, you never know. I just don't like to see conservatives of any stripe sounding like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber saying, so you're saying there's a chance.
You're saying there's a chance. How many Cruz crew hashtags did you see after that happened yesterday? I saw quite a few, actually. To get the hopes up even in that way was a bit unfortunate yesterday, because it was just never going to happen.
It was interesting how many people were listening, how many people started live tweeting. And I guess it's been such an odd and bizarre year, Greg, that the idea of somebody saying, ah, never mind, I'm back in. I haven't seen that since Ross Perot in 1992.
Right.
So I suppose, you know, something like that could happen. We, you know, but I just kind of wonder, has anyone talked to Carly Fiorina lately? Carly, was that a tiring week for you?
Clear your schedule, Carly. Maybe.
Don't make any appointments. Don't. No, no. Leave the cruise tickets. No, no, no. You might be needed again. So.
Yes, you'll need the other cruise tickets. All right. On to the.
That's what I meant. Yes.
On to the crazy martini now. And this is courtesy of the Associated Press. In a break from recent major party nominees, Donald Trump does not plan to invest heavily in a data-driven effort to target voters in the fall campaign. Despite pressure, the billionaire businessman also does not expect to release his tax returns before the November election. As for the lack of data in terms of targeting voters or even really an effective ground game, he says, quote, my best investment is my rallies. The people go home. They tell their friends. They loved it. It's been good. Jim, obviously it's worked for him so far, but why not add both if you're really insistent on winning this thing? Because obviously if you look at what Ted Cruz did, he did far better than he would have done because he invested in those things.
I can't say, this is the most shocking thing Donald Trump has said. I'm not even sure I could say this is the most shocking thing he's said today in this past hour. But Trump seems to think, 2008, Obama, you know, he calls it his data processing machine. It's not a calculator. It's not an app. Just think of it as like unbelievable. It's not just polling. Like the first thing is going through voter rolls, going through consumer research data, demographics, census, all kinds of stuff to say, all right, who are the kind of people who are likely to vote for our candidate? And just trying to find as many of them as possible. Then to contact them. Then to figure out, you know, contact them through mail, contact them through phone, contact them through email, through Facebook, knocking on their door, doing everything you can to get them. And one, you know, like the 2008 version of the Obama campaign did a lot of this. In 2012, when the traditional turnout models said, hey, you're going to lose to Romney. Romney's, you know, this is, you know, end of 2011, beginning of 2012. They said, well, by golly, we're not going to win with this electorate. We have to change the electorate. And they went out and they found unregistered voters who they figured to be likely African-Americans, plenty of Latinos in Florida, plenty of African-Americans in Ohio, Cleveland, neighborhoods like that. And they got them registered. And lo and behold, turnout amongst these groups was higher. So this is a tool to bring out more people who support you. And even if you think you're the best candidate ever and your rallies are fabulous and huge, you know, like, why would you not want this tool? Even if you don't need it, people down ticket need it. And as I just wrote in the corner, Greg, I make the probably erroneous assumption that Donald Trump cares at all about down ticket Republicans. But if you do, you would want the Trump campaign and or the RNC to do this. And for what it's worth, the RNC has been investing in this research and type of materials and data and databases and tools to reach out to voters and things like that. But you'd want to have – like this was a huge advantage for Obama in 2012. And this is why the Romney campaign was so shocked in the results on election night, because they had an idea of who was going to show up to vote. And instead, amongst, you know, key demographics for the Democrats, they came out in much higher numbers than expected. You got to learn from that. And here's Donald Trump just basically saying, yeah, I'm not going to bother with that. I just don't think we need that. Even if you think it's exaggerated, the importance of it, or other factors are bigger, it's a tool. Why would you not want to have that tool, Greg? Unless the candidate is a tool himself.
Oh, ba-dum-bum. It's a mystery. Although he doesn't have anybody to hire from the Romney campaign, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's no orca.
There's nobody to hire on the GOP side. Oh, you got it to work last time. Let me hire you.
If I said a data-driven turnout operation is the GOP's white whale, hunting for it like Ahab. So, yes.
Man, we've had a lot of good classic literature references this week on the Three Martini Lunch.
We educate you as well as amuse you. Turn your books to page 387. So.
Right. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.